Today's scripture reading is from Matthew 20, verses 29 to 34. Two blind men receive sight. As Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. Two blind men were sitting by the roadside, and when they heard that Jesus was going by, they shouted, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." The crowd rebuked them and told them to be quiet. But they shouted all the louder, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." Jesus stopped and called them. "What do you want me to do for you?" He asked. "Lord," they answered, "we want our sight." Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately, they received their sight and followed him.
Good morning. So today is August 17th, and I'm officially announcing that it's Leonard Appreciation Day. And if you don't understand that now, wait about 10 minutes. this is a little bit interactive. So quick show of hands, how many of you have heard of or know of Peyton Manning, the quarterback for the Denver Broncos? Right. So Peyton is considered, very hard for me to say, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Maybe even one of the greatest players of all time. And last season, he had a season for the ages. He threw for a record 5,477 yards and 55 touchdowns. Both records. And I bet you thought I was going to talk about another quarterback, but I'm not. So how about a show of hands for anyone who has heard of Dick Hoyt? Yes. So Dick is from Winchester, Massachusetts, and over 40 years ago, his son Rick was born. And somehow Rick's umbilical cord became wrapped around his neck, leaving him brain damaged and unable to control his limbs. The doctors told Rick's parents that he would be a vegetable for the rest of his life. But Dick Hoyt's, Rick's father, didn't believe it. He noticed the way Rick's eyes followed him around the room. When Rick was 11, they took him to the engineering department at Tufts University and asked if there was anything they could do to help Rick communicate. No way. That was the response. There's nothing going on in his brain. Well, Dick said, I don't see that. Tell him a joke. They did, and Rick laughed. It turns out a lot was going on in his brain. So they rigged Rick up with a computer that allowed him to control the cursor by touching a switch with the side of his head. Rick was finally able to communicate. And his first words? "Go Bruins." A few years later, after a high school classmate was paralyzed in an accident and the school organized a charity run for him, Rick pecked out, "Dad, I want to do that." Yeah, right. How was Dick, a self-described porker who never ran more than a mile at a time, going to push his son 5 miles? Still, he tried. "Then it was me who was handicapped," Dick says. "I was sore for two weeks, but that day changed Rick's life forever." "Dad," he typed, "when we were running, it felt like I wasn't disabled anymore." And that sentence changed Dick's life forever. He became obsessed with giving Rick that feeling as often as he could. He got into such hard belly shape that he and Rick were ready to try the 1979 Boston Marathon. "No way," Dick was told by the race official. See, they weren't a single runner, and Rick didn't qualify for a wheelchair competitor, so for the first 2 years, they just joined the massive field and ran anyways. Later, they would find a way to get into the race officially, and in 1983, they ran another marathon so fast, they made the qualifying time for the Boston Marathon the following year. Then somebody said, "Hey, Dick, why not a triathlon? How's a guy who's never learned to swim and hadn't ridden a bike since he was 6 going to haul his 110-pound kid through a triathlon?" still he tried. To date, they've done more than 200 triathlons, including 4 15-hour Ironman competitions in Hawaii. This past April, the Hoyts ran their 32nd Boston Marathon, and it would be their last. The Hoyts had planned to make the 2013 marathon their last because Dick is 73 and Rick is now 52. And over 200 triathlons and marathon takes a toll on your body. But after the bombings at the finish line and after the Hoyts were among the more than 5,000 runners who were stopped before completing the race, they decided to come back to finish their personal race and to honor the human spirit of those killed and injured at last year's race. It wasn't easy. The Hoyts were moving slowly early on in the race. Slow enough that the race director, Dave, went on his motor scooter to check in on him. The Hoyts plodded on, reaching the half marathon in 3 hours, 19 minutes, and 58 seconds. They were slow and frequently to acknowledge fans. "It wasn't tough out there," said Dick, "but we made it a little tougher because all of our fans out there were encouraging and it was nice to be a part of the unbelievable crowds." It was over 7.5 hours when the Hoyts finally reached the finish line. But they were not alone. Some 20 members of Team Hoyt, the organization they created to help those who are physically disabled become active members of the community, were right there with them. Members of the team, runners of all abilities, first caught up to the Hoyts, who started earlier, and then adjusted their pace so they could finish the marathon together. It was very emotional. What was so nice about the finish is that these people are fast runners and they waited until we caught up and we came across together. "This is the best day of my life," said a weeping Dana Krashen, a 36-year-old woman who said she had been following the Hoyts for 34 years and who was overwhelmed after joining Team Hoyts Flourish at the finish. The Hoyts inspire surprisingly deep emotion in their fans. As the race director pointed out, there are a lot of inspirational people running in the marathon, but people don't know who they are. Everybody knows the Hoyts. In case you were wondering, their best time was 2 hours 40 minutes in 1992. That's only 35 minutes off the world record, which, in case you didn't keep track of these things, that was held by a guy who was not pushing another man in a wheelchair at the time. So what makes a person truly great? What is greatness? I think if you look back at the scripture, I think either Jesus set the bar really high or we've kind of lost it along the way. Today, our society seems to have laid aside the old virtues and now judges greatness by fame, prestige, power, and wealth. Think about it for a moment, about those that are presented before us as the greatest. Katy Perry, Peyton Manning, Donald Trump, and various TV and movie stars. These are people thought to be great by many because they have fame, prestige, power, wealth, they're visible. Is the ability to impersonate someone else in front of the camera a basis for greatness? Is a person's skill at amassing money a grounds for greatness? Is one's vocal quality and ability to entertain and amuse that person makes him or her great? What about being at the center of power, and whether that be in a business or in politics? Is a person great because they achieve a position of power? Jesus, however, measured greatness in terms of service, not status. God determines your greatness by how many people you serve, not how many people serve you. This is so contrary to the world's idea of greatness that we have a hard time understanding it. It is much less practicing it. The disciples argued about who deserves the most prominent position, and 2,000 years later, Christian leaders still jockey for position and prominence in churches, denominations, and parachute ministries. Thousands of books have been written on leadership, but very few on servanthood. Everyone wants to lead, no one wants to be a servant. We would rather be generals than privates. Even Christians want to be servant leaders, not just plain servants. But to be like Jesus is to be a servant. While knowing your shape is important for serving God, having the heart of a servant is even more important. Remember, God shaped you for service, not self-centeredness. Without a servant's heart, you will be tempted to misuse your shape for personal gain. You will also be tempted to use it as an excuse to exempt yourself from meeting some needs. Popular acclaim certainly is not a test for greatness. For it is, as William Hazlitt said, the true test of greatness is the page of history. Fame comes and goes very quickly, and a person famous in one generation is unknown in the next. Money is not a good test either. For not only does it come and go quickly, but history reveals that the most great men were poor, not wealthy. Special abilities may give a person a day in the sun of popular acclaim and a sense of greatness that is specialized on the field. But just because a person is a great athlete, actor, actress, singer, or politician, or whatever else, that doesn't mean the person is great. Daniel Webster understood the true foundation for greatness when he said, "A solemn and religious regard to spiritual and eternal things is an indispensable element of all true greatness." Men may claim themselves to be great, as did Muhammad Ali, "I am the greatest." And people may say that someone else is great, but the only real judge for greatness is God Himself. So, I'd like to go back to the scripture for just a minute, and I've changed this sermon about 14 times. And I think the part that defined greatness in the scripture was not that Jesus has allowed those two guys to see again, because that's just beyond us. I think the part of greatness in the scripture was when everybody else told the two blind men to be quiet, sit down, stop it. He went against the norm. And he went ahead and he made them see. So I think that's what true greatness is. And when I look out today, I see greatness. When you walk into this church, it's an ongoing effort every Sunday to learn, to be great, to serve God, to live life the way He wants us to. And I see greatness in this church. I see greatness in the pews. I see greatness in the hall. And I see greatness in our community. So much negativity is on the news. And my father, love him to death, is that person who thinks that this generation of kids is going to ruin everything. Pull your pants up, turn down your music. They have no respect. No respect. And he lived on a dairy farm most of his life. And he retired, moved to Georgia, and that lasted about 2 days. And he went back to work as a custodian in a school. And when he told me this, I said, "This is a disaster. This is not going to work, Dad." And he complained about the kids every day. Same old thing. Pull your pants up. No respect. They don't have a clue. They don't know what manners are. It's just the worst. And he's had a few run-ins with some kids. But he was valued as a worker, so they changed his schedule. He now works from 2 a.m. to 7:30 a.m., where he does not have to interact with any kids. So, about a week ago, he called me, and he said, "You know what? I'm proud of these kids in the school. I can't. Exactly. I dropped my cell phone. I said, you know, where's my father? You know, who is this person? In Chesity High School in Gainesville, Georgia, which started out as a simple protest, gained a little bit of national recognition when a student who was an atheist in this school challenged prayer at the high school, specifically around the football team. The football team started its practice with prayer. During the games, they had prayer, shirts with prayer, and the student wasn't even on the football team. But it gained a lot of momentum, and it turned into a lawsuit against the school board to get prayer out of Chesity, one student. And lo and behold, it wasn't the parents, the PTO, it wasn't the teachers. The students started to hold morning prayer services on the football field, organized by the students. To me, they went against the norm, the today, the society where, you know, it's about bling, it's about what you have, not who you are. Looked at the lawsuit and said, not us, not today, not now. And they continued to hold the morning prayer vigils. And for my father, who stayed to observe from a distance, first time he said, they're probably going to leave a mess, so I'm going to have to clean up. But the fact that it's there, and you're not going to hear about it on the news. You know, we only hear about the doom and gloom. It's there, and it's up to us. And we don't have to throw 6 touchdowns on Sunday, or we don't have to sell 1 million records, or have 47 million Twitter followers like Katy Perry. It's about being true to God, true to each other, and true to ourselves. Thank you very much for your time.